He played the lyre for Saul because Saul would have periods of depression. And he would actually be affected by an evil spirit. And in the Bible, in the Old Testament, Hebrew thought, if something spiritual happened, they considered that that came from God, whether it was something God sent or something God allowed. And in this case, it was something God allowed. God had withdrawn his spirit from Saul because of Saul's disobedience. He allowed an evil spirit to afflict Saul. And from time to time, that evil spirit would do that. He'd affect Saul's mind, drive him into depression and bouts of moodiness. And David was brought to the courts because he was good at playing the lyre, a young harp. So we saw how he was allowed to visit his father from time to time and go back and take care of the sheep. And during this period of time, the Philistines were a constant enemy of Israel. The Philistines lived on the coast, the Gaza Strip. You heard of that? And they were constant enemies of Israel. And so there was continual conflict between the Jews and the Philistines. And during one of these wars, the Philistines invaded Judah and came within 15 miles of Bethlehem, where David was. David's three oldest brothers, they joined up with the militia to defend their homeland, and they went with King Saul to fight. And you remember for the story, David was sent by his dad to go take some food to his brothers who were in this militia facing the Philistines. And David found out that as the two armies were facing each other, there was a big guy who had come out from the Philistine ranks. He was 9 feet 9 inches tall. That's a big dude. 9 feet 9 inches tall. He wore bronze armor, and the scripture shows that he wore about 125 pounds of armor and weapons. He had bronze helmet. He had bronze armor on his chest. He had bronze armor on his legs. He carried a spear that had an iron tip on it that weighed 15 pounds. And that iron tip could penetrate any bronze armor the Hebrews might have had. And this guy would challenge. He would say, instead of our armies fighting today, you send out somebody to fight me. And whoever wins the battle will be the victor. And whichever army loses by this individual hand-to-hand combat, you will agree, and we will agree, we'll be your slaves. And so this big man would challenge the ranks of Israel every day. And for over a month, every day he'd step out and challenge them, and nobody would volunteer to fight him. Now, King Saul was very frustrated about this, so King Saul offered a reward. He said, if I can find anybody in my army to fight this dude, I'll give them three things. I'll give them money. I'll make their family free from taxation. That would get my attention. And I'll give them my oldest daughter as a wife. Three things. So in the story that we went over last week, and I'm just giving you a synopsis of it, David goes to take food to his brothers who are in the militia. Militia's facing the Philistine ranks. And out comes this guy once again making this challenge. And as he does, the first rank of the Jews kind of back up. They're scared of him. Nobody wants to fight him. And the people around start talking about what the king is offering. David hears it. And he talks to him. You mean he'll give the king, Saul, will give money, no taxation, and a good-looking woman. I'm in. And so he starts saying, this uncircumcised, that's what they called him, this heathen Philistine, I can beat him. And they pass that word on, and King Saul hears about it. We did the story last week, and King Saul brings David into his presence, and as soon as David shows up, Saul probably put his eyes down and said, oh, you're the court musician. You're a 19-year-old teenage boy. And that's what he was, a 19-year-old teenage boy. There's no way you can fight this guy. And David says, oh, wait a minute. You don't know my experience of growing up helping my dad. I've been a shepherd all of my life. And there have been occasions where I've had to face a lion and a bear who are trying to attack our flock. And each time I took my slingshot and I threw my rocket, the lion and the bear, knocked them cold. I took my dagger out and killed them. I killed the enemies of my dad's sheep. This big guy is going to be just like one of them. You might remember I said last week that the shepherds, these weren't little play slingshots. They had a long strap with a pouch in the middle. They'd put a rock, and the rock could be as big as a tennis ball. They'd whirl that around. They'd let go of one end. It would throw a rock. I'm told it could throw a rock at over 100 miles an hour. So if it hit you, it hit you. And David said, I can face him. And that's what happened. You know the story. David found some rocks from the brook. He went out to face the Goliath. Goliath was insulted that this teenage kid was coming at him with a shepherd's staff and a slingshot. And the giant started taunting him. What are you going to do with that? David says, in essence, you'll see. Everybody else had been backing up for this giant. David ran toward him. David started whirling that slingshot, and he let go of that rock. And all this armor this guy had on, he didn't have anything at his forehead. And that's what hit him. Right in his forehead at 100 miles an hour and knocked him slap cold out. Then David ran over to him, took the guy's own sword, stuck it up in the air so both armies could see it gleaming in the sunlight, and whack, cut his head off. Ooh. Then David took that head and lifted it up in the sky for both armies to see. And everybody was stunned. And then the Philistines were terrified. Their champion was killed by a shepherd. And they started running. And the Hebrews started chasing them. And they chased them and they fought them for 10 miles. And they obliterated the Philistines in that engagement. That's the backstory. That's what we talked about last week. That brings us to where we are today. After this, David's no longer the court musician. Now King Saul has to bring him into the court as a real official and as a warrior. So let's begin with chapter 18 of 1 Samuel. And I'm going to read the first five verses I call friendship in brotherhood. As soon as he had finished speaking to Saul, he's holding up the head of Goliath, talking to Saul. I beat the guy everybody was scared of. As soon as he had finished speaking with Saul, the soul of Jonathan, that's King Saul's oldest son, the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David. And Jonathan loved David as his own soul. And Saul took him that day and would not let him return to his father's house. Then Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was on him and gave it to David and his armor, and even his sword and his bow and his belt. And David went out and was successful wherever Saul sent him, so that Saul set him over men of war. And this was good in the sight of all the people and also in the sight of Saul's servants. Jonathan was the oldest son of Saul. And unlike Saul, Jonathan had a heart for God. And he had courage, and he saw something in the life of this teenage boy that made a kindred spirit. They both were courageous young men, and they both were devoted to the Lord, and Jonathan saw that, and that created a friendship between the two. Jonathan had shown both courage and devotion to God before. I want to look at an example from 1 Samuel chapter 14, starting with verse 6. This is an engagement that happened before the engagement that we've been looking at. Jonathan said to the young man who carried his armor, remember, he's a prince, "Come, let us go over to the garrison of these uncircumcised," that's a way of saying these pagans. "It may be that the Lord will work for us, for nothing can hinder the Lord from saving by many or by few." And his armor bearer said to him, "Do all that is in your heart. Do as you wish. Behold, I'm with you, heart and soul." Then Jonathan said, "Behold, we'll cross over to the men, and we will show ourselves to them. If they say to us, 'Wait till we come to you,' then we'll stand still in our place, and we will not go up to them. But if they say, 'Come up to us, and we'll show you something,' the Lord has given them into our hand, and this shall be a sign to us." So both of them showed themselves to the garrison of the Philistines. And the Philistines said, "Look, Hebrews are coming out of the holes where they've hidden themselves." And the men of the garrison hailed Jonathan and his armor bearer and said, "Come up to us. We'll show you a thing." Jonathan said to his armor bearer, "We got them now. Come up after me, for the Lord has given them into the hand of Israel." Then Jonathan climbed up on his hands and feet, and his armor bearer after him. They're going up a hill. And they fell. That means the enemy was killed. They fell before Jonathan and his armor bearer, killed him. After that first strike, which Jonathan and his armor bearer made, killed about 20 men within, as it were, half a furlough's length in an acre of land. In a narrow space, these two guys killed 20 guys. And there was a panic in the camp. That's the camp of the Philistines. In the field and among the, all the people, the garrison and even the raiders trembled. The raiders are people who have gone along with the garrison, with the Philistines. And they trembled, and God did something. The earth quaked. And it became a very great panic. Jonathan has already showed courage because he and his armor bearer, he's willing to go up and face 20 guys. And he'd do it by himself. He said, "You want to come with me, armor bearer?" And the guy said, "Yes, sir, I'll do it." And they both, two of them went up, climbed up the hill, fought 20 guys and killed them. But also, Jonathan showed devotion to God. Because he said, as he was speaking to his armor bearer, "Let's go fight. God can work something through them. Whether by many or by few, God can work out a miracle." So Jonathan has already demonstrated in his life that he's courage and he has trust in God. Now, he's about 5 years older than David. He's in his early 20s. And when he meets David in Saul's tent as a warrior, Saul and David are bonded in friendship. Now, don't think anything untowards in this. This is not woke culture. These are not homosexual leanings. This is just friendship. Friendship. And that's what it was. So after they had met, there came a point of time, probably some days later, where Jonathan and David made a covenant. And in that covenant, they exchanged things. Jonathan, being a prince, had a lot to exchange. And he gave up several items to show that his friend David, he was making him an equal to himself. And it seems from the text to indicate this, that Jonathan, who technically is next in line to be king, he's the oldest son of Saul. He's next in line to be king. That he recognizes by the leadership of God that David is going to become king. And he's willing to accept it. That takes a lot of humility. He's willing to accept it. So let's move on to the story. Because that's definitely not how Saul feels about things. Verses 6 through 11 I call jealousy in the king. As they were coming home when David returned from striking down the Philistine, the coming home from the war, not just that one battle, the women came out from all the cities of Israel, singing and dancing to meet Saul with tambourines, with songs of joy, and with musical instruments. And the women sang to one another as they celebrated. Saul had struck down his thousands, and David his 10,000s. And Saul was very angry. This saying displeased him. He said, "They have ascribed to David 10,000s, and to me they have ascribed thousands. What more can he have but the kingdom?" Saul eyed him that day on. The next day, a harmful spirit from God, remember this is Hebrew thought, a harmful spirit of God rushed upon Saul, and he raved within his house while David was playing the lyre, as he did day by day, trying to calm him down with music. Saul had a spear in his hand, and Saul hurled the spear, for he thought, "I'll pin David to the wall." But David evaded him. Twice. Well, when the menfolk came back from the war, the women were glad. "Hubby's back. Boyfriend's back. They're back." And they played musical instruments and they sang. And they sang a song. And we don't have all the song. We just have a little phrase from it. And in that phrase, they're saying, "Saul has killed his thousands and David his 10,000s. And they're probably trying to be respectful to Saul, saying, "Saul, you really put a good guy as a commander. You did a good job. You picked the right dude." That's what they're probably saying, but Saul doesn't take it that way. He says, "They're crediting David with a greater victory than me. Well, he's a threat to my kingdom. He's a threat." And he became suspicious of David. And the next day, as they've gotten back to the house of King Saul, which is actually in Gibeah in this point in time, and David's playing the lyre because Saul's having one of his moods. He's depressed and upset and raving and talking gibberish. David's playing the lyre. Saul takes a spear and throws it at David. Now, I don't know about you, but that would get my attention. And it appears, and I'm having to kind of improvise here, it appears like when he missed the first time, he ran over, grabbed another spear, and threw that one at him. Because David ducked two times, twice. David had to leave. think I'd leave too. I think the music program's over with then. Oh, Saul was jealous. He was envious. You know, those things are dangerous in a person's mind. They're dangerous. You know, Scripture says something about it. Let's look at Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 30. A tranquil heart gives life to the flesh, but envy makes the bones rot. Envy is negative. Jealousy is very akin to that, negative. And Saul was filled with both. He was filled with both. He was envious of the acclaim the women were given. He was jealous of the status young David had among the people. And from that day forward, Saul did not like David. And yet David's a hero. He can't get rid of him. He's a hero. But he doesn't like him. And yet, of all things, after a little bit more time passed, Saul has a different plan to how to deal with David. He invites him to join the family. May not want to join that family. He invites him to do that. So let's look at verses 12 through 19, I call scheming in royalty. Saul was afraid of David because the Lord was with him, but had departed from Saul. So Saul removed him from his presence and made him a commander of 1,000. And he went out and came in before the people. That means David did. And David had success in all his undertakings, for the Lord was with him. And when Saul saw that he had great success, he stood in fearful awe of him. But all Israel and Judah loved David, for he went out and came in before them. He was successful in all his errands, all his missions. Then Saul said to David, "Here is my elder daughter, Merib. I will give her to you as for a wife. Only be valiant for me and fight the Lord's battles." For Saul thought, "Let not my hand be against him. Let the hand of the Philistines be against him. If they kill him, nobody will blame me." And David said to Saul, "Who am I? And who are my relatives, my father's clan in Israel, that I should be son-in-law to the king?" But at the time when Merib, Saul's daughter, should have been given to David, she was given to Adriel the Maholathite for a wife. Saul was afraid of David. And he could tell that God's presence was with David, and God had removed his presence from Saul. And he thought, well, the best way I can deal with David is just to send him out into combat. If I send him out into combat enough, eventually those Philistines are going to kill him. And that'll take care of it. It won't look like I did anything. I'll look clean. So the way I have to do this is I have to demote him. Right now, he's considered a general. I have to demote him to a colonel, give him a regiment, let him go out and fight. And so now you're in charge of 1,000 men, but you have to be involved in the fighting hand-to-hand yourself. So you go out and fight the lawless battles. And if you fight enough of those battles, I'll give you my elder daughter, Merib, to be your wife. That was one of the three promises at the beginning, remember? And so Saul has thought, well, I've got an idea of how to get rid of David. Let the enemy kill him. But the problem is, David is very humble. And he says, "Saul, I'm not qualified to be son-in-law to the king. I'm a poor man. I come from a poor family. In fact, my whole clan, we're not very distinguished. I'm not worthy of being your son-in-law." Saul's kind of frustrated at that. He winds up giving that gal to marry another person. That idea doesn't work. But all the people in Israel and Judah, they love David. He keeps having victories. He keeps winning. People love a winner, and that keeps happening. So Saul isn't quite finished yet. So let's look at the verses 20 and following. I call plotting in the palace. Now Saul's daughter, Michal, that's the feminine spelling of that word. Saul's daughter, Michal, loved David. And they told Saul, and the thing pleased him. Saul thought, "Let me give her to him, that she may be a snare for him, and that the hand of the Philistines may be against him." Therefore, Saul said to David a second time, "You shall be my son-in-law." And Saul commanded his servants, "Speak to David in private and say this, 'Behold, the king has delight in you, and all his servants love you. Now then become the king's son-in-law.'" And Saul's servant spoke these words in the ears of David. And David said, Does it seem to you a little thing to become the king's son-in-law, since I am a poor man and have no reputation? I don't know how he thought that, but he did. And the servants of Saul told him, thus did David speak. Then Saul tells his servants to go back and tell him something else. Then Saul said, thus you shall say to David, the king desires no bride price except 100 foreskins of the Philistines, that he may be avenged of the king's enemies. Saul thought to himself to make David fall by the hand of the Philistines. And when his servants told David these words, it pleased David to be the king's son-in-law. Before the time expired, David arose and went along with his men and killed 200 of the Philistines. And David brought their foreskins, which were given in full number to the king, that he might become the king's son-in-law. And Saul gave him his daughter, Michal, for a wife. But when Saul saw and knew that the Lord was with David, and that Michal, Saul's daughter, loved him, Saul was even more afraid of David. So Saul was David's enemy continually. Then the commanders of the Philistines came out to battle. This is over a period of time. And as often as they came out, David had more success than all the servants of Saul. His regiment never lost. That his name was highly esteemed. Now Saul has two daughters. One he's married off to another guy. And this second one, Michal, who actually loves David. And so as you saw in the storyline, Saul's trying to get those two together because he wants to use this gal against him. It's going to wind out that she's going to help him later on. But he has that mindset. And so he says, David, he says, I don't want money. I know you come from a poor family. Here's what I want you. I want you to kill 100 Philistines. And to prove it, I want you to bring body parts back to me. Now, kind of gory, but mutilating bodies in that day was part of warfare. You know, normally they'd bring a head or a hand or something back. So I was kind of weird. He says, bring back their penises. I guess they had to be really dead for that. David's a warrior. He's had great success. And he says, I can do that. My guys, we've never lost a battle. We can do that. And so Saul sets a time limit, says you have to get this done by this date. And then if you succeed, you can marry my daughter. If you don't, then the deal's off. So David and his regiment, they go out. They encounter the Philistines. They kill 200, not 100. And he brings back the grisly, yucky proof of it. Lays it out before the king. That should have been a gory sight. Lays it out before the king in the courtroom. And everybody in the royal courtroom can see, well, he did accomplish the mission. No doubt that. And so Saul's got to give his daughter Michal to David to marry. And that is what he does. And so David becomes the king's son-in-law. And over another period of time, David's regiment continues to win battles. Every spring, the Philistines would probably attack the Jews. Every spring, there'd be a new war. And every spring, David's regiment would be involved, and David's regiment would never lose. And Saul's really terrified of David now. And so, after some years have passed, he's tired of trying to figure out a way to get this. He's going to do it himself. So, let's look at chapter 19, verses 1 through 8. I call character in the family. And Saul spoke to Jonathan, his son, and to all his servants that they should kill David. But Jonathan, Saul's son, delighted much in David. And Jonathan told David, Saul, my father seeks to kill you. Therefore, be on your guard in the morning. Stay in a secret place and hide yourself. And I will go out and stand beside my father in the field where you are hiding. And I will speak to my father about you. And if I learn anything, I'll tell you. And Jonathan spoke well of David to Saul, his father, and said to him, let not the king sin against his servant David, because he's not sinned against you, and because his deeds have brought good to you. For he took his life in his hand, and he struck down the Philistine, and the Lord worked a great salvation for Israel. You saw it and rejoiced. Why then will you sin against this innocent blood by killing David without cause? And Saul listened to the voice of Jonathan. Saul swore, "As the Lord lives, he shall not be put to death." And Jonathan called David, and Jonathan reported to him all these things. And Jonathan brought David to Saul and was in his presence. He was in his presence as before. And there was war again. And David went out and fought with the Philistines and struck them with such a great blow so that they fled before him. Well, after a few years, Saul's tired of trying to secretly get rid of David. He says that the Philistine armies are not going to do it. David always seems to win. And he can't figure out how to do it, so he just says, "All right, everybody in my staff, report to me now. Let me have all my officers and all my servants. Here's the order. Kill this guy." And they're all looking stunned. "Wait a minute. The hero of Israel? Your best commander? Your warrior? You want him dead?" "Yeah, I want him dead. This is my royal order. Kill him." Jonathan knows in his heart, "I can't take part in this. I've made a peace covenant with David. I can't be a part of this." So Jonathan finds David. He knows where he is. He finds him. He tells him, "Here's what I want you to do. I want you to hide in this field that my dad likes to walk in, probably in the morning. And I'm going to walk with him as he takes his morning walk. And I'm going to bring the subject of you up. And I'm going to talk to my dad about you. And I'm going to hope to persuade him to stop this craziness. You hide, and I'll tell you what goes on." That's what they do. David hides in the field. Is not seen by Saul. Saul and his eldest son take a walk in the field, and Jonathan starts telling his dad, "Dad, this is crazy. Why are you going to order the murder of this man who's done you nothing wrong? He's innocent. He's never done anything against you. This is wrong. He's also been a help to you." So Saul has one of his sane moments. He's actually rational that morning. And so he says, "Well, John, I guess you're right. I guess I was a little emotional yesterday, a little frustrated. I'll countermand that order. Call my staff, tell them everybody that order is overturned." That's what happens. Then Jonathan goes out, finds David, brings him back to the court, stands with him himself to vouch for him. Now, again, I want you to understand that Jonathan pretty much knows by now that it's going to be David who's going to be king, not him. You see, humanly speaking, it'd be a whole lot better for Jonathan if David was killed off. If David was killed off, Jonathan will be king. But Jonathan stands with David because he recognizes this is God's man. I'm going to obey the will of God. And he does. He shows character. When I said character in the family, he's the only guy who has any character. But he does. David is returned to the royal court. He's returned to the army. And once again, his troops, when they go out to fight the Philistines, his troops win. So much that the Philistines run away from him. Everybody knows about this guy, Commander David. Well, Saul's moment of reason didn't last very long. He changes again. So let's read on to the story, verses 9 and 10, I call spear in the wall. "Then a harmful spirit from the Lord," remember, I said God allowed it. "Then a harmful spirit from the Lord came upon Saul as he sat in his house with his spear in his hand. And David was playing the lyre." He's playing music for him once again. "And Saul sought to pin David to the wall with the spear. But he eluded Saul so that he struck the spear into the wall. And David fled and escaped that night." Saul's having one of his bad days again. David comes in to play music for him, try to calm him down. You know, calm down the man. "Here, I'm going to play the harp for you and calm you down." But it doesn't work. Saul gets so frustrated, ranting and raving, he has his spear in his hand. Now, interestingly enough, he doesn't have a scepter. Most kings would hold a scepter to show their royal power. He holds a spear, and apparently he just wants to present this image as a warrior king. "I sit on my throne with a spear in my hand." Well, he's got that spear. Here's David playing music to help him. He gets so angry and frustrated and mad, he takes that spear and he throws it at David. And David ducked again for the third time. Saul can't understand how he missed. "How did I miss you? You were right there." And David runs out of the room. And David runs to his house. Remember, he's son-in-law of the king. He's got a nice house now. He runs to his house. I bet he locked the door. I got to wait for Saul to calm down. He's one of his enraged moods again. He's crazy. This is insane. He's insane. But this time, Saul's not going to calm down like he did before. Saul's going to continue to be the wickedness that's in his heart. And that's where we continue in the story. I call discernment in a wife. Discernment in a wife. Look at verses 11 and following. Saul sent messengers to David's house to watch him, that he might kill him in the morning. But Michal, David's wife, told him, this is talking to David now, if you do not escape with your life tonight, tomorrow you will be killed. So Michal let David down through the window, and he fled away and escaped. Michal took an image and laid it on the bed and put a pillow of goat's hair at its head and covered it with cloths. And when Saul sent messengers to take David, she said, he's sick. Then Saul sent the messengers to see David, saying, bring him up to me in the bed that I may kill him. And when the messengers came in, behold, the image was in the bed with his pillow of goat's hair at its head. Saul said to Michal, why have you deceived me thus? And let my enemy go so that he has escaped. Michal answered Saul. He said to me, let me go. Why should I kill you? Saul first sent assassins to watch David's house. When he comes out in the morning, kill him. Ostentatiously, I guess he's saying, I don't want you to go in there and bother my daughter. Just wait till the man comes out of the house. When he comes out of the house, get him. Now, Michal, and Michal, if you want to say it that way, is Saul's daughter. And she probably has friends at court. And she knows things. And she says to her husband, she says, my daddy's going to kill you. If you don't get out of this place tonight, you're going to be dead tomorrow. And to David's credit, he listens to his wife. It's always a good thing to listen to your wife. she knows something about her dad, and so she tells him, listen, I'm going to help you escape. Now, David was son-in-law of the king. He had a nice place and apparently was right up against the city wall. So they opened the window. This happens more than once in the Bible, by the way. They open the window, and she puts down a rope, and David climbs down the rope, and he escapes, gets down to the bottom, takes off. He actually makes it about 3 miles, but that we'll talk about next week. And she pulls up the rope. And then she knows, well, I got to buy him some time. So she creates a fabrication. She creates a deception. She takes her idol. Now, that's significant because it shows that Michal, who grew up as Saul's daughter, is not a pure Yahweh worshiper. She also has idol. Now, that idol is called teraphim in the Hebrew. It was an idol, household idol, so big that people might have if they worshipped a pagan god. It was also considered to be something that women would pray to for fertility in order to bear children. She's not a pure God worshiper. But he can't blame her much. Look for the family she grew up in. So she takes that idol, probably takes some pillows and some of David's clothes, kind of puts it together, puts goat's hair at the top like his blanket is up to his top of his head, has goat hair coming out, makes it look like he's in the bed, asleep, sick. And so the messengers, well, first of all, they're assassins. They report back to Saul and say he never left his house. And Saul sends them back. And they go to the door, and she said, look, he's sick. And apparently they just sort of peek inside, and they, okay. And they still don't want to harass her. She's the king's daughter. They don't want to take any chance of hurting her. So they go back to Saul, and they said, sir, we would have done something, but he's not leaving his house. He's in his bed sick. And so for the third time, Saul's angry now. He says, go get the daggum bed. You guys carry the bed all the way here. Pick it up with him in it. Bring it to me, and I'll stab him and myself in the throne room. So for the third time, They go, these assassins, they go to the so David's house there. Michael, out of the way, hun. We're taking the bed. And they go to get him. And oh, this ain't him. This is a deception. And they look at her and they say, what are you doing? And she goes, So they bring her to her dad. They take her to the king. And he's furious. Why have you, my daughter, deceived me and helped my enemy escape? Isn't it sad that Saul thought of David as his enemy? Why have you done this? And she makes up a lie. She says, Dad, I had to. Because if I didn't help him escape, he told me he'd kill me. Now, that's a lie. But she learned how to lie from her father. She learned how to lie from Dad. And he buys it. He says, okay, all right, I know what kind of warrior he is. He buys it. So he didn't bother her anymore. And he's lost David. David's gone somewhere. He's escaped. Saul is frustrated, but he couldn't get rid of the guy he hated. Now, it's interesting. David never considered Saul to be his enemy. But Saul always considered David to be his enemy. David's heart was just. Remember my sermon title, The Just and the Jealous? David's heart was just. And David escaped. And of all things, as he escaped, he made it about 3 miles. We'll look at this next week. You know what he did? He wrote a song. He wrote a song. Now, I don't know about you, but if somebody was trying to kill me, had sent professional assassins to take me out, I don't think I'd be in the mood to write a song. But that's what David did. And we have it in our Bible. Now, I'm not going to read the whole psalm. And we call it a psalm. But you know what a psalm is? It's a poem set to music. David wrote this. Let's look at the first few verses of Psalm 59. Psalm 59. Deliver me from my enemies, O my God. Protect me from those who rise up against me. Deliver me from those who work evil, and save me from bloodthirsty men. For behold, they lie in wait for my life. Fierce men stir up strife against me. For no transgression or sin of mine, O Lord, for no fault of mine, they run and make ready. Awake, come to meet me and see. You, Lord, God of hosts, are God of Israel. Rouse yourself to punish all the nations. Spare none of those who treacherously plot evil. This psalm begins with a cry for help. I think if somebody's trying to kill me, I'd cry out too, don't you think? But you know how the psalm ends? It ends with a cry of confidence. Let's look at the end of the psalm. Psalm 59, verses 16 and 17. But I will sing of your strength. I will sing aloud of your steadfast love in the morning. For you have been to me a fortress and a refuge in the day of my distress. Oh, my strength, I will sing praises to you. For you, oh God, are my fortress, the God who shows me steadfast love. David wrote a song, a psalm. A psalm that begins with a cry for help and ends with a cry of confidence. Isn't that what we're supposed to pray? Isn't that what we're supposed to do? Be honest with God. Be honest with God about what we're dealing with. Don't try to sound all religious and nice words. And just tell God how you're feeling. Tell God what you're thinking. He knows it anyhow. Just be honest. Tell him the truth. You're frustrated. You're mad. You're upset. You're lonely. You're hurt. You're bewildered. Tell him. Cry out. But also, realize who you're crying to.
Amen.
Yes. Realize who you're crying to. Cry out with confidence. God, I know I'm hurting, but you hear me. I know I hurt, but you love me. And you have been a fortress to me all the way up to this point. I'm not dead yet. You've been a fortress to me up to this point. And God, I know you're going to do something good. Now, I'm not a prosperity preacher. I can't tell you God's going to bless your bank account like these liars on TV say. I can't say that God's going to make you perfectly healthy this side of the resurrection like these liars on TV say. But I can tell you that God will work in your life.
Amen.
Yes.
He will work and he will work good. he will work good. David cried out for help, and then he cried out in confidence. And that, my friends, is what we are to do. We are to do the same thing that David did in Psalm 59. Running away from assassins. He tells the truth, and he's still trusting God. I think that's pretty cool. Yeah. Let's bow for prayer.